The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And they're like, wait, Ahmed Fareed might say the f- word again, so we got to tune in here.
If anything is going to get him to do it, it's his Eagles performance today.
I said the F word and then actually said the word. I don't know why. I just didn't say it full-fledged
That's
the whole
what
time.
We do. That's a f- word.
Oh, yeah. What's up, baby? It's Chris Sims Unbuttoned. We are here. It's Connor Rogers time. That's right. That swearing, cussing fool Ahmed Fareed is not here. And you know, you're going to listen to this podcast, you're going to hear the F word. I mean, that's just part of the podcast. You're just not used to hearing it from Ahmed Fareed. We'll see if Connor Rogers throws out a few today. He's usually professional. I don't know if I've actually heard him swear on this podcast either, but I will say he does swear in real life, unlike Ahmed. So maybe we can get that out of him. What's up, man? Good to see you.
Good to see you. He's not suspended. Just want to make that clear. He didn't get in trouble for swearing for the first time. He's just a busy man.
He can't get suspended for swearing on this podcast.
No, you can't.
I mean,
yeah, you can't.
Yeah, if anybody's going to get suspended around here, it's going to be me.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Listen, I'm going to choose mine wisely.
Okay, choose so it. We'll see. Make it count when you get in there.
Dude, right. I'm pumped for this one. Offensive scheme tiers today.
Yeah, we had a little fun today.
Great. Good, average, bad. That's not the tiers. I want to make that clear.
Yes,
here.
That's right. We tried to get a little context with this. And it was a good idea, honestly. It was, Pete Demolitis and Matt Casey kind of came up with the idea. They hear me talk about offenses so much. We thought it might give a little different angle to kind of unpack last week and talk about teams going forward.
It's good to be on a show and hear positive things about Pete, because Pete produces Fantasy Football Happy Hour, the show I'm on 5 days a week once.
Right.
And he has a nickname as the third string producer.
Well, yeah, you got to come over to PFT. Florio's got lots of nicknames
man.
Pete.
Pete just gets run over, man.
Yeah.
He's a good sport about it.
He is a good sport.
But it's good to hear some positive. For Pete, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Pete does some good things. He does some other things that aren't so good, but
right.
That's all right.
The giant Santa hat? That's, yeah. I don't know about that. We'll see. So, anyways.
Yes.
I mean, let's jump right into it,
you
Chris.
Go?
Yeah,
you ready to go?
We got a good question to get right into
okay,
it before
cool.
we get to the actual teams. This is from Petway. If you and Connor were offensive coordinators for your favorite team, would you guys be run first or pass first? Which of them is tougher for defensive coordinators to game plan against? Chris, I think so much conversation right now is things like, pass over expectation, and then teams that can basically control the game and run at you. I'm curious what you think of this, because for me, I don't think there's a clear answer without knowing
hard.
Your personnel.
I think that's the real
and the matchup.
That would be the honest answer, right? That's where my mind goes. I mean, if my team has Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, we're going to be pass first. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. But I think in general, if you just gave me 11 okay football players or whatever, I'm old school. I would tend to be a little bit more run-oriented.
Yep.
I'm not saying it would be 50-50, but it certainly wouldn't be – I wouldn't be 70-30 pass or something like that. It'd be 60-40 pass, 55-45. I just believe in physicality, controlling the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I also think, the run game, and if you're a little creative and well thought out in that department, it is tough for defenses to figure out how to stop that. And then the things you can do off of it, that's what I love. And then, you talk about some of the top tier offenses in football, right? And I think you've heard me say this before. A lot of them play through the run game. I mean, the 49ers, we know what they're doing.
Right.
The Ravens, we know what they're doing.
Yeah.
The Dolphins, as awesome as they are at throwing, they still stay extremely patient with the run because they want those play actions and everything to create some of the disadvantages, right? The Chiefs are closer to 50-50 than ever before.
Yeah.
The Eagles. So I do think the run game opens up other avenues as far as play action pass, screens to the wide receivers, and then gives your team an attitude. And, you know, and if it's and of course gives you other, I think, ways of like, hey, the elements are bad. Oh, well, we can run the ball. Okay. Oh, they have a good pass rush. Well, we can have a run game to slow them down a little bit. I think it does. And then add it on top. And I know we've had this combo before, too. In college football right now, they don't see pulling, block down, pulling guard. Oh, no, now the fullback's coming around the edge to kick out, too. Right? So this is like for the young front seven players, the NFL run game is an adjustment for them, and I think that gives you an advantage as well.
And on the counter side of it, we've talked about this. So many offensive tackles in college aren't even taking true pass sets consistently.
Right.
That if you come out there and have a rookie tackle, because a ton of them have to
play. Every down?
I mean, asking them to pass protect in this day and age is nearly impossible with the athletes. I'm with you. I lean more on, obviously, there's got to be balance, but you need to be able to run the football, because if you're a team that just is a drop-back team constantly, you're going to get teed off on.
Yes.
And it's like, look at how many quarterbacks have gotten hurt, how athletic the edge rushers have gotten. And like you said, Chris, just the respect you have to generate for the run game creates so much space in the pass game.
Exactly.
And a lot of the teams we're going to talk about today are the masters at that, quite frankly. It's why they are so dedicated to running the football, almost to the fan bases, you know, it drives them a little nuts at times.
Sure,
but there is a thought process there of what it's going to do in the second half of the game.
Yeah, it is. So. Exactly. The thought process, what it sets up is the big thing.
Yes.
And all those awesome plays you see the 49ers and Dolphins make, you know, most weeks, not the Dolphins last week.
Right, we'll get into
that. But when you see that, a lot of the, there goes Debo around the edge on a reverse. Well, it was a fake run to McCaffrey, right? Oh, there goes Tyreek. Oh, it was a fake run to Mostert, right? I mean, that's so much of what they do, and some of the plays that we think are so cool are created because of run game stuff. And then the wrinkles off of it. And, let alone, hey, defense is hurt this week. We want to control the ball, you know, keep the clocks, keep them fresh. We got a few banged up people. We don't like how we match up against this team. Oh, well, we can run the ball and chew up some clock. It's another reason that, you know, I'd be a little bit more run oriented, let alone I grew up with Phil Simms and Bill Parcells and the New York Giants.
Yeah, you're
so going
to be taught
that way
to run the ball.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And I think another thing to it this year, Chris, that we're seeing feels like more than ever, or at least in recent years, so many backups have to play in this age.
Yeah.
And when you have a backup quarterback coming in there, it's a little easier to have more of a balanced offense than say, hey, our starter got hurt that makes $40 million a year and we can throw at will, and now a backup's in there. You can't play the same way all the time.
No, you cannot.
So,
you definitely can't. We're going to get to some teams as we go through these tiers and break this down that, we're going to see teams have made that adjustment to protect their backup quarterback and keep them still competitive in the playoff hunt.
So let's jump right into it. You kind of hinted at both of these teams. The first offensive scheme tier, I'm on a new level.
You like that?
I love that one.
A little future for you?
Yeah, absolutely. 49ers and Dolphins are the teams that fall into this bucket, and we have to start with the 49ers. We've got a great question out of the gate. This is from 49ers701. Hey, Chris, Kyle should be the coach of the year. He's the only coach in the league that when they do well, people say, oh, it's because of Kyle's scheme. Oh, and also nobody is talking about how Kyle's eye bags have gotten significantly better since Purdy became QB1.
Seriously. that's true. He definitely seems more relaxed and at ease because he's got a quarterback that he knows he can trust, and he doesn't have to manage, and he doesn't have to worry about, wait, I went over something 17 times this week, and is my quarterback going to screw it up on Sunday? And he doesn't have to worry about any of that anymore. And I am one that, I had to talk about this last week at 49ers701. I hope you heard me talk about it on the podcast. I think Shanahan is coach of the year. I'm sick of a little bit of the, they exceeded expectations and all that. There's a lot of great people up for this year, but one, I almost look at it a little bit more and go, my main thesis, Connor, is I think Shanahan's the best head coach in football right now, and I honestly don't think it's close. Right, I think him and Andy Reid are a little bit of a tier of their own for the results and things they've done over the last 5 years. Right, I mean, if Shanahan and the 49ers go to the NFC Championship game, it'll be 4 to 5 years they have done that. Right, I don't know. People always tell me, oh well, it's for the guys that exceed expectations. Man, we went to the NFC Championship game with a third string quarterback last year. Did that not exceed expectations? expectations? Why didn't he win it that year? Did they think they were going to go to the Super Bowl the year they did with Jimmy Garoppolo? They came out of nowhere and were one of the best teams in football. The year before, they were 0-10 for the start of the year. So where that he didn't get it that year. I feel like it's a year here with what he's doing with Purdy, how dominant they are, and how they look like they are clearly the best team in football right now. I don't disagree with my man at 49er701.
So there are, and I agree with you, yeah. I love Kyle Shanahan, Coach of the Year. I think another thing he doesn't get enough credit for is how good he is at hiring a defensive staff,
sure.
It feels like year after year.
Right.
The way he's had to retool that group.
Yes.
Because the guys get hired away.
Right.
Why doesn't he get credit
coaches everywhere?
For that?
Look at all the GMs right. He's got everywhere.
It's a pipeline.
Right.
Legitimately.
He's dominating the minority candidate
yes.
Draft pick situation.
Yes.
So, yes, that's kind of my point, too, this is why I should go into it. And to your point with the defense, the thing, and what I've been trying to tell people really over about the last 10-11 weeks is the defense is his. It's the defensive coordinators come in there and he goes, this is what I want on
right.
defense.
It doesn't change, right?
Now you step in. Wilkes has to learn what they do in San Francisco. Wilkes doesn't get to bring his scheme in. Now I'm sure he's got some ideas and he gets to tweak and tinker a little bit, but yeah, to that point, and then the drafting as well. That's all Shanahan as
right.
well. Now I know he messed up Trey Lance, but I can give you a long list of other ones he didn't mess
right.
up. And, mid-round guys that are stars and everything like that. So that's why I stick up, and I know I'm a little biased for my friend there.
There's four coaches ahead of him in the Coach of the Year favorites right now.
Yeah.
There are three. I'll give you a hint. Three
yeah.
are in the AFC. One is in the NFC. Could you guess?
So, them? I'm thinking Shane Steichen's
yep.
probably one of those,
one of
right?
Them.
You said three are in the AFC?
Three are in the AFC.
Gosh. D'Amico Ryan.
Yep.
Okay. And then Mike McDaniel.
Yep.
Right?
Nailed it.
Right.
Yes.
So, two of those three guys are from his staff,
yep.
of course, which I find hilarious. And then the one in the NFC.
It's rapidly trending the wrong way.
Well, that's got to be Dan Campbell, the kneecap biter.
Yep.
Right.
Still
right.
the favorite, though,
yeah.
Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
Right
wow.
Now.
Still the favorite.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that, too. A little bit like you were talking about with Shanahan. I think there's a little bit of like what he's done the last 2 years to also turn that around
yeah.
goes into this conversation. But, yeah, they're kind of limping here towards the finish line. Hopefully they can get that limp, corrected.
So let's talk a little bit about the Niners
yeah.
scheme here, because you look at Brock Purdy right now. I think everybody's trying to figure out what does Brock do, or what limitations does Brock have.
Yeah.
So what is Brock doing for Shanahan's scheme right now that's making it function at this level that it feels like we have not seen?
Well, one, the playbook is unlimited because of Brock and how smart he is and how he can mm-hmm. digest everything, right? That's why Shanahan likes Matt Ryan and Kirk Cousins
yeah.
and those type of guys, right? That's why I like Mac Jones coming out in the draft, right? I can give them 70,000 plays and 70,000 rules, and they'll remember it all and execute it like I had talent and I could play quarterback, right? That's how he looks at it. So I think that's the big thing, let alone, and I know the system quarterback thing's a big thing with Brock Purdy. He does make plays outside of the system. It's not Josh Allen or Mahomes. I get that. We know that, right? But there is, better mobility than he gets credit for. So he makes a run or gets outside of the pocket and makes a few completions every game. That's, backyard football-ish. His ability to sometimes see plays or have a feel for what's going to pop open before it even pops open, I think is next level. His anticipation, I think all of that. And then the subtle movements in the pocket and his throwing, even though it's not a late laser arm, it is like absolutely on target, like almost all the time, to where they don't leave yards on the field. If there's somebody open for a 70-yard bomb, he hits them in stride and they get a 70-yard bomb. They don't have to go back and catch it and fall down for a 38-yard gain and then we kick a field goal. They maximize it, right? Oh, here goes, Deebo Samuel across the middle. You hit him on the run, it's a 60-yard touchdown. If you make him slow down and stop, it'll be first
yeah.
and 10 on the 25, and we might settle for a field goal. That's where he is special and takes advantage of all that's there to be had, let alone gives them a little extra, too, with, some backyard-type plays here and there.
You and I have talked about how analytics can be good and bad. There's ones to value and one to not.
Right.
One I really like from Pro Football Focus is the big-time throw. It's
yeah.
basically tracking the special throws. Purdy right now is 12th in the league with 21 big-time throws. That's tied with Mahomes.
Yeah.
So this isn't somebody that's out there dinking and dunking. And just,
absolutely not.
I mean, there are special throws on tape that I like that you brought up Matt Ryan. Do you think that's the closest quarterback that Shanahan's coach compared to what Purdy's doing now? Not as a career path, because Matt Ryan's a special player. But in a nutshell, like this year right now, what he's doing.
I think it's the closest to emulate that.
Right. Because, I mean, we go through Jimmy. There's been a lot of, like...
I think
it goes back to Matt Ryan.
I think it's Matt Ryan.
Wild.
You know, a little taste of, I think, why he liked Kirk Cousins, too.
Okay,
but he didn't get an extended period of time playing and coaching him either. So, but I think it has a lot of that feel. And to your point, you know, they're not dink and dunk, right? Now, their ability to run the ball and throw screens to Deebo Samuel, who then runs for 50 yards and does all that, that does set up some of these aggressive pass plays because teams are like, what do we stop? It's the greatest run game in football. They throw screens out here really well, right? They got reverses and speed sweeps that we're worried about. Like, oh, no, now it's Deebo going across the middle for a 45-yard gain, right?
You got to tackle him.
You
got
to tackle him. So there are just so many things that they throw at you, and he's really good at taking advantage of those. And his throwing downfield and the aggressive explosive plays are definitely an improvement for last year. Last year it was good, but there was still a number of plays that I'd come on here and go, well, this play, like I was just saying, this should have been a touchdown, but it was he was out at the 25 or whatever. There was a lot of that that doesn't happen this year, and that was one of the encouraging things about their three-game loss, their three-game losing streak. I know we made mistakes in some of those games, but the Bengals game, I remember sitting there watching it going, this might be the best I've ever seen Brock Purdy play. I know he had a few turnovers and mistakes, but he made some throws in the game to me that gave me confidence to go, wait, if they don't dominate in the run game and do everything the right way, they're going to still be okay because Purdy can make some plays and decisions where you just go, that's next level. And that's where I do give him a lot of credit.
So the other team in this tier, the Dolphins, we had a question from C. McManu. How different are the Dolphins and 49ers, both schematically and how their personnel affects their ability to run?
It's a great question. And you know, they're a lot alike. They really are. I think where, and I tried to explain this a few weeks ago, where, you know, the motions, the shifts, the stressing of defensive rules are, this is where their next level, Shanahan and you know, McDaniel. I think that the Dolphins do it a little bit more through the pass premise, right? We're going to throw the ball and fake it and ding, boom, boom, screens, quick pass over the middle, boom, boom, and Tua's just going to dish it out, where Shanahan does all the movements and same stuff that McDaniel does too, but he just goes, we're going to do it so I can get McCaffrey up the middle for 10, and then 12, and then 10, and then he'll cut it back and get 70, and then we'll fake it to him, and then I'll hit Deebo over the middle, or George Kittle, he'll be wide open. So that's how they do it. I think McDaniel and them do it the opposite way. They go, hey, Tua and Waddle. I mean, and Tyreek and Waddle. And then you're going, oh my gosh, I've got to play pass defense. And then he goes, Mozart up the middle, Mozart on the edge.
So crack toss.
It's just like, a little bit way of a different approach as far as how they attack you because of their personnel set. And the 49ers have a more of an advantage in the run game thing because their O-line is physical, and that's the way they are. The one thing I worry about with the Dolphins, and you saw it on Monday night, is if the game gets grimy and ugly, their O-line gets overpowered, right? And that's what I worry about. The Titans basically said, we're not going to let you throw the ball the other night, and we'll break it down here in a second. And they were outnumbered in the box in the running game almost the whole game. And, you know, 158 yards rushing, right? By Miami, that's a good number. I get that. But I think when you take into account that, like, the Tennessee Titans played pass coverage the whole night and basically, like, did some things where they were like, we're not even sound here and we don't even have people in the run gap, but we just think our front four will be able to do good enough to where you won't totally expose us in the run game. That was a win for the Tennessee Titans. And that's what does worry me about the Dolphins going forward against some of the upper tier type of football teams.
And now their offensive line depth is being tested.
Worse, right?
Yeah.
Connor Williams.
Yeah, he's out for the year. Right. I mean, they've already been down
the
Robert
weakest
Hunt,
part of their
Tron
team.
Armstead.
So now you're having to deal with that.
Without
a
doubt. A funny tweet from DeAndre Hopkins saying, Tyreek Hill for MVP, give praise when it's due. I say it's funny, but it's also, in all seriousness, watching this offense without him the other night, you can legitimately make the case that he is the most valuable player in the league. He won't win the award.
I mean, probably not. But I mean, listen, I've been banging the table for this for the last 5 weeks. Why? Why can't he win the award? We all sit here every week, and in the grand scheme of things of the whole NFL, we talk about Tyreek Hill, the individual, more than any other player in all of football. Every week, all season long. The offense is doing revolutionary things, and then the main driving force is him. So that's where, like, I'm trying to break barriers here a little bit and stop this. The quarterback just gets it no matter what. That's got to end. I just don't understand that. And that's where I inject, you know, McCaffrey or Tyreek Hill, I think, deserve to be in the conversation because the offense is run through them in both places. This is different than, like, you know, Kansas City, where the offense is run through Mahomes and always has been, right? This is like, no, we have some other guys, and then the quarterback just wheels and deals off of that. And, those, you know, they deserve to be in the conversation. I'm with that. But, I mean, Tyreek Hill, nobody affects their own offense more than he does. Nobody affects any defense and how they play the Miami Dolphins offense more than Tyreek Hill, right? And we're going to get into it in a minute. I'm going to show you some pictures and some things that the Tennessee Titans did where it's a little disappointing the Dolphins didn't take advantage of it, to where you go, like, yeah, they're doing all this to stop Tyreek, and they're basically going, here, if you want this, you can have it because we can't stop everything, so we're just betting on that you won't do this, right? And we'll get it to it. But, yeah, I think for me, through this point of the year right now, and Dak Prescott's making a strong case right now and right up there with him, like last week, if you made me vote, I would have voted Tyreek Hill as the MVP of football.
Let's jump into what the Titans D did right against them in that 28-27 win. And it's time for Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS. The win probability chart from Next Gen Stats, according to the NGS win probability model, the Titans' win probability was as low as 0.4% when they trailed the Dolphins 27-13 with 3 minutes and 8 seconds left in regulation.
I get it.
The win goes down as the second most statistically improbable comeback in the Next Gen Stats era. The only recent one last year, week two, the Jets at the Browns, Joe Flacco led them to the improbable comeback.
The onside kick and the throw.
Yes,
and
the failed coverage against Corey Davis.
Not going out of bounds by Nick Chubb. Yeah,
just a disaster.
Right? Like two or three times the Browns didn't go out of bounds or went out of bounds when they shouldn't have.
And Garrett Wilson walks it off. But, it's just insane how this game ended, and obviously one of the most improbable wins we've seen in a long time.
They couldn't do crap. So I understand when they went down and make, you know, they have the two turnovers late in the football game, you're going, well, their offense hasn't done shit since the first half, basically. They had one ugly field goal drive, you know, in the second half. Other than that, you were going, well, damn, yeah, they messed it up. That's it. It's 28-13. And all of a sudden, they look like a different offense the last two drives down the football field. And you get Miami into, oh, we don't want to give the big play up. And they change their scheme a little bit, trying to protect and make the team run out the clock a little bit. Will Levis just, you know, again, continues to really, really impress and prove us all wrong, who didn't have him ranked high as a draft quarterback or eligible draft quarterback last year. But impressive win by the Titans. You know, Vrabel is a master at managing games, right? Managing the clock. Coming up with a game plan that certainly slowed down Miami. And then Miami, you know, the blocked field goal, the fumbling the snap of the five, they could never get the game on their terms, really. Except to the end of the football game, and, you know, that's when their defense kind of broke and Will Levis went up and down the football field.
That was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS, but now it's time, Chris, to go inside the notebook.
Boom.
Let's take a look at the Titans' defense here, right?
Well, so this is a defense that they played throughout the night, okay? You don't see this, and I want everybody to check this out a little bit, okay? Because they did this time and time again, where there's three safeties deep, as you look like right here, right? They're playing, you know, a corner, number 21 here, nickelback, when they get an 11 personnel, as the weak side linebacker and the weak side corner, basically, right? 21's so you got, like, Sean Murphy bunting, number zero, right on the top right there. He's actually the corner, but they're using him as the weak side, two deep safety. They're playing Tampa 2 here. So they were lining up in this three across, typo look, and you're going, what kind of defense is this? I don't really understand it, right? And then, okay, we got seven guys in the box, sure. But within doing that, there was nobody out over Waddle, right? And you could also, if you play actioned or ran 30 into the flat or anything like that, you could run the ball a week because 21 had to worry about getting to the flat to be the cover two corner, right? So unusual alignment. But again, what we talk about sometimes with these great offenses is you're going to have to cheat something and take a tactical chance or risk. And this is what they did throughout the night, right? And in different formations too. And I don't understand why the Dolphins, they could have thrown a 5 or a 10 yard out to Jalen Waddle the whole football game.
Yeah, let's look at that.
I mean, here you go. Look at this right here. This is one play for you. All right, this is 21 personnel. Right. Look at Waddle down here. He has a corner that's 12 yards off of him and Sean Murphy bunting, right?
And he runs 4-3.
And he runs 4-3. And he's in a tight slot, and then you see McCreary. That's McCreary, right? Yeah, 21, yep, McCreary. He's over there as the weak side linebacker, but he's really playing weak side corner.
Right.
He's there to just go, hey, we're here for the run game, but I'm not really here for the run game.
Right.
I'm just here as a presence and a number to check. So my point is, and I could have shown you 20 screenshots like this where I'd go,
wow,
all you have to do is fake a run, and he could just go like that right there. Just run 4 yards, and I'll hit you and turn around. You'll be one-on-one with Murphy Bunting. Fake the run, run a 5 yard out. I'm going to throw it to you because 21, if you fake the run at him, McCreary, he's got to respect it because he's actually responsible for that run gap too. They could have gotten the Titans out of this defense if they just threw the ball to Waddle 3 or 4 times. They would have gone, oh, fuck, they figured it out. We got to get out. We got to do something else. And now they're not going to be able to maybe toy with Tyreek Hill. But as you see, they have – and can you go back one picture, Pete, here? Sorry about that. It's just that, as you could see, they came to a determination through their numbers and their breakdown, Connor, where they must have gone, they don't throw the backside guy very much. They don't, and in fact, when they do, he probably comes that way to the front side, right? So they were like, so what? And then they were probably also like, they don't throw out routes, so who cares? Mm. Their numbers don't show that. So let's take a risk here and see if they figure it out. And within that, you know, here you see there's four eligibles to a side here for the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, the Tennessee Titans got everybody over there in dropping in the zone. So it makes it for tight windows, and some of the plays and where they were designed for the first and second read weren't open because Miami, McDaniel, Tua let the Titans cheat. And I talk about this all the time on this podcast. Like, you can't let defenses cheat and not show them, hey, you can't do this. This isn't sound.
Get them out of it.
Get them out of it. And I'm just shocked that Mike McDaniel and company let them stay in this so much during the night.
Do you think there's a reason they're not challenging out with out routes with Tua? I mean, I go back to the Black Friday game, the pick six he threw to Eccles when he tried to drive the ball to the sideline. And that's the second time Eccles has done that to him in his career.
It's his arm is
fourth
weak.
Or fifth corner. Right.
That's below average NFL starting arm when it comes to that.
It's kind of an indictment here that they're not challenging that to get them out of it.
They don't want to do that. They don't, you know, if he throws an out route, he wants to be able to throw one down the field where he can loft it up and kind of let Tyreek go run and get it, right? You know, which he did throw a few of those during the game where, you know, those cover two out routes where he'd get up on the safety and run like a 20-yard out route, and Tua's got great timing and feel, and he puts it out there in the right spot, and he's accurate and all that. But I think your point's right. I think that, one, the Dolphins don't like to do that. It's not in their scheme anyways. Two, Tua's not good at it. Three, you know, I know, the 49ers, the Dolphins, where do they like to throw the ball? Over the middle of the fucking football field, right?
Always.
You know? And to me, that's, they got to watch for stuff like that because teams are going to cheat and do stuff because you just can't stop all that they do. And that was, you know, a little disappointing that they didn't take advantage of the opportunity there to get Waddle. I mean, again, you know, little run fake, throw a 5 yard out route to Waddle. He's going to be one on one with Sean Murphy bunting all night long, who's a phenomenal player, don't get me wrong. But still, I would like Waddle or Tyreek in those instances on the 10 yard out route, you know, to make something happen more times than not.
This from Graham Taylor. I know it's not about offense, but can we get a damn okay for Harold Landry? Was a force on Monday night and looks like he's back to form after his injury.
He's close. He really is.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
He's not starting yet, so that tells you he's not totally back. But
it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah.
You know, I still think you could see a little bit of reluctance to like really plant that leg in the ground and turn the corner like he used to.
Right.
But it's all getting better. He's a phenomenal football player. And listen, the Titans, you know, Al Shaair, Murphy Bunting, Danico Autry, Amani Hooker, right? And of course, Harold Landry, especially towards the end of the game. I mean, they really showed out and played big time football and popped a lot as I was watching this film.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, let's jump to the next tier. Be aggressive, B-E aggressive. Cowboys, Packers, Jaguars, Saints in this one. Chris, we have to start with the Cowboys. Not that long ago, you brought up how Dak deserves to be in that MVP picture right now with Tyreek and with McCaffrey. Our first question on the Cowboys here from Honold Blake. How much better was the Cowboys? How much better has the Cowboys offense gotten during the season? Don't remember a play caller switching up so drastically in pre-snap movement and creativity. Credit to Mike McCarthy.
Credit to Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, it's big a change.
I mean, I got on him in week five hard. I said it's too basic. It's the shortest passing game in football, and they just line up in it. So when it's just this formation again. Oh, it's this boring ass play again. Oh yeah, and it's 7 yards or shorter. I mean, you're not going to beat the good defenses in football playing that way. That's why they got stomped by the 49ers.
Right.
The 49ers are like, we know where they're going to be. We get to come downhill the whole game. And, you know, we've seen a lot of these plays in our first week of OTAs. Like, that's how basic it was. So, like, phenomenal adjustment by the Dallas Cowboys. The motion, the movement has all gone up. And I think the biggest thing is just the aggressive nature of the passing game. That's the biggest thing. I don't sit here and go, oh, wow, this is McDaniel or Shanahan or whatever here. But I just go, wow, they're attacking. They attack now always. And they should. They can protect phenomenal. Dak can stand in there and throw the ball down the field at a phenomenally high level. And then they got the receivers to go along with that, right? So you look at it from that aspect, they were leaving potential on the field by this 5-yard slant, 6-yard hitch route, right? And I give Mike McCarthy a lot of credit for making that adjustment.
So how did Dak carve up the Eagles? I know we have some screenshots we're going to dive into here for this one. What did he do in this game for an Eagles secondary that's been very vulnerable this year?
Very vulnerable this year. It's a game where, and if you've seen my notes that I wrote, that they should have played more man-to-man. Yeah. They should have, right? The Eagles, to me, are a little too simple in the secondary. A little too like, oh, hey, this is what the coverage is. Quarterback, you know what we're in, right? They're a little bit too reliant on the Jimmies and the Joes right now. I wish they would disguise and change things up a little bit, right? That would be the first thing I would say. Now, this is a game where, you know, the secondary, I know statistically it doesn't look great, but I was more disappointed in the pass rush. I mean, really, there was a number of plays early on in the game. The Eagles are kind of all over their pass game. It's just when Dak has 5.5 seconds to throw, I mean, you can't cover that long. Somebody's going to come open, right? So that, to me, was one of the biggest issues, is that the Eagles' pass rush, when it was just the front four, had absolutely no chance to get after Dak Prescott. And I just can't believe that. And again, that goes into something I've been saying too, is that they got to trick it up front to help out a little bit as well, right? I mean, the 49ers don't just stand there with their four guys all the time and just go, you four, go. They put Fred Warner in a gap here or there. They move three linemen to one side and one lineman on the other side. They give you different looks. The Dallas Cowboys, right? It's the best pass rush in football. Do they just go, hey, front four, you do it yourself? They got a million people at the line of scrimmage. They create advantages that, you know, that prop up the pass rush to a greater level. And that, to me, was one of the concerning things about the Eagles in this football game.
Yeah, offensive line numbers really stand out with them in this one.
Do they?
Yeah. It just seems like there wasn't a lot of pressure against the tackles. Tyron Smith got beat a couple times, but for hurries. Now he's not giving up quarterback hits and sacks.
Right.
And Tyron Smith's a guy that knows how to, you know, when to let people
run themselves out of the play. He's getting the ball out of quick here. I don't need to hold him forever.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he's a savvy veteran.
All right, let's get to there was a question here that I want to shout out.
Yeah.
You answered it already. Swish B said earlier in the year you mentioned you were not impressed with Dallas's attack on offense. Do you still feel the same? Obviously, you have changed your mind and seen adjustments from McCarthy.
Definitely.
How about the Packers here in this
be aggressive tier, right? To me, and it's not that, but I got the Cowboys, the Packers, the Jaguars, and the Saints, just to hit them on this be aggressive phase here. And the big thing to me is just when they're aggressive, their offense is great. That's what I'd say. You know, they have good meat and potatoes of their offense, but when they push the ball down the field, it opens up all the meat and potatoes and makes them a much dangerous football team. So that's where I say these are teams where I just go, they have to have a little emphasis on, wait, we got to remind ourselves to throw the ball down the field, maybe take a few shots, draw up a few plays in the dirt every week to do that, and it changes their offense drastically. And that's why I put these four teams in this area.
So what was different for Jordan Love against the Giants?
Yeah. Well, first off, okay, he threw the ball like shit.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
So, I Didn't mean, think great. About early on in the football game.
Right.
How many fucking throws did he miss? And they put this, you know, and Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, they were all like, hey, he's off early on. He's missing throws. So that was the big thing. You know, I love their offense. They do a lot. You know, there was some plays and things to be had there early in the game where they could have got the Giants into a game they didn't want to play, but he didn't take advantage of it. Jordan Love, the one thing, I love all his arm angles. He's fearless in the pocket. His ability to throw off the back foot with pressure and all that is awesome. But when there's no pressure, we don't have to throw off the back foot and do this sidearm flick, right? It doesn't work in the elements like we had in the Northeast here on Monday night.
Yeah, that MetLife wind is different.
It was cold and windy here. You need to get your feet underneath you, step into throws, and throw lasers through it. And he started to do that at the end of the football game. But too many of the throws early on were, let me hang back there and kind of flick it. And the wind blew it up. And he didn't have the same accuracy that we have seen over the last month. So that was the issue. But generally over the last month, the Packers have been extremely aggressive, tons of movement, motions, shifts, all that. And to me, it unlocks Jordan Love and their offense and made them much more dangerous, even though Monday night didn't show that.
To me, it's something I wanted to ask you about. Yeah. It seems like Love's really impressive stretch, and when he got really hot, coincided with a healthy Christian Watson.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And then no Christian Watson against the Giants. What impact? Because it feels like when he's out, the Packers play six wide receivers. Like, there's just a million guys getting targets. But when he's out, this is a noticeably different offense.
Watson's special.
Right.
You know, he's big, and he can fly. Like, he's one of those guys where you'd go, other than Tyreek Hill, if you put all the receivers in football in a race, you'd go, he might be one of the guys that wins it, right? If you take Tyreek Hill out of the race. I think he's at least in that conversation of guys. And, yeah, he changes their offense. He's the guy that, like, if it's one-on-one, we're going to him. And he's the guy, too, a little bit like Tyreek. When he's on the field, teams go, ooh, we can't play this coverage. We got to do this because we got to protect against him. He can run by all our guys. And it opens up other stuff within their offense. And that is, I mean, your point is real. It cannot be under-talked about, or what do I want to say? I don't know what
understated?
Understated. Yeah. Thank you very much. enough that his importance to that offense and everything that Jordan Love, the run game, the reverses, all of that work at a higher level when Watson's on the field.
So the Jags and Saints also in this bucket.
Yeah, and we've seen the Jags been doing this lately, and that's why they've been a little bit better on the offensive side of the ball. They've been attacking down the field, and I think it's opened them up and made them more dangerous. You know, now, I mean, lately it's just the Jaguars' defense has fallen apart here in front of our eyes.
So I think a weird one, but I think people do wonder this. The Saints,
yeah.
The status of Derek Carr, he's had every injury under the sun this year.
Right.
Would they be better with Jameis, or do you think that ship is sailed? Because Jameis is a guy that will play to this tier. Like, you want to talk about being aggressive. We know Jameis will let it go.
I mean, I wonder.
Right.
I do. I definitely has that thought crept into my brain a few times over the last, you know, 6 or 7 weeks. Definitely. There are games and plays when I watch the Saints and go, Derek Carr was way too conservative. There was plays down the field. What's he looking at? Why did he check it down so early? Right? There's a lot of that. So, yes, that's the problem. And, yeah, with the Saints, it's, you know, it's more Derek Carr-ish than the offense itself. That I just go, man, come on, just, you know, hang in there, have a little bit of a different mindset and fire it a little bit instead of, like, you know, I don't know, managing the game, being a little too careful. I think he's making it harder on himself in that offense than he needs to.
And their personnel, I know Shahid's been hurt, but when healthy, their personnel, they can play that attacking down the field. That's the frustrating
part of it.
That's
disappointing.
Right.
Exactly
right. Noah Olave could do it. You know, Shahid could do it.
Exactly. Even the big 17, A.T. Perry.
Yes.
I mean, he's a little bit of a threat down the football field. I mean, yeah.
Go up and give him a chance.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I, you know, yes, that's all year I've been like, the Saints.
Right.
There's no way they should be this boring or unexplosive as they are with this group of guys that you just mentioned.
Our next one, a personal favorite, run the damn ball.
Run the damn ball.
Run the damn ball. The Ravens, Eagles, Falcons, and Browns. I think the average football fan could have guessed those four teams
right?
in this bucket. When you look at on the season, the Ravens first in rush yards per game, the Eagles eighth, the Falcons sixth, the Browns seventh right here. So, Chris, I mean, let's start with Baltimore. And we have a question on Baltimore from CoJam13. How much change do you expect for the Ravens O-line this offseason to match Todd Monken's scheme? It seems like the biggest difficulty in the transition is a lot of the line from the previous regime doesn't quite fit into the new one. We know with Greg Roman how run-heavy they were. With Monken, it feels like they could still run the ball, obviously, but they also will attack down the field now.
Yeah, they definitely will. I don't know if the personnel up front needs to change a whole lot. I think they just need to stay healthy. That's how I look at
it. Bug.
I think they're good enough to make any adjustment, you know, that you seem that they necessary or seems necessary. I don't think that's the issue, at least, you know, in my assessment. I think a little bit is all of it put together is just that, hey, the offense is learning. The players are learning a new offense and a new scheme. Monken's learning his personnel a little bit. You know, Monken's learning, I think, you know, he had to learn some of their run plays and go, wait, they've been awesome at running the football here. I don't do these all the time, but let me start to learn how you do it so I can incorporate in my offense because it's a good thing. I don't want to just lose this. So I think that's the big thing. You know, and then, of course, when you add on Lamar and his ability to keep the ball and run off of that, I think they're just a little bit still tinkering with all of it, right? But when they are at their best is when they run the ball effectively. Whether that's – and I don't mean Lamar scrambles. I mean true running the football, you know, with the running backs, Gus Edwards, Mitchell, design run by Lamar every now and then. When they do that and the way Lamar is throwing the ball – they're going to be unstoppable if they can just get that going because it's going to be too hard to match up with all the guys they got in Lamar's right arm.
So that's where I wanted to go next.
Yeah.
The Ravens and the Eagles, both quarterbacks are a massive part of those rushing attacks.
Right.
Both off script but designed, like you said.
Right.
The Falcons and the Browns, not so much at
not
all.
Not at all.
What does it do for an offense when a quarterback can be a legitimate running back in your scheme?
It gives you just numbers advantages all the time, right? And it can affect coverages, and that's the biggest thing, right? You know, when Lamar and Jalen Hurts and that running game are all-encompassing, working at all levels, right, they get looks in the pass game where you just go, quarterbacks would lick their chops and go, oh, my God, they're going to play like this on second and eight? because they're so worried about our run and everything we do. Like, I'm getting this coverage against this play. Oh, my gosh, this is going to be fun here, right? That's what it really does. That's the big thing. But the big thing is you got to be able to – that's where, like the Ravens are the number one running team in football right now, right? I believe they are, okay? But to me, I would go, it's still not on the level of the 49ers, in my opinion. The 49ers are getting no rushing production out of their quarterback, right? You know, they run it the traditional way, and you got to bend to, oh, that, right? Right now, in Philadelphia and in Baltimore, there's not enough of the traditional running. There's a little bit too much of the Lamar scramble and the Jalen Hurts scramble that's adding to that, and I would like to see less of that and more of the traditional run with the quarterback design run with it. That's when they work and hit on all cylinders on both of those offenses.
So this one on the Eagles from Truth Matters 233. Is Brian Johnson really calling the plays, or is it Sirianni? I think it's Sirianni. He's heavily involved in the design and the game plan. The route trees are horrible, and so is the lack of motion.
I don't disagree. This is, you know, you've been listening, you know, at Truth Matters 233. You've been listening to the pod, hopefully. You've been hearing me say this. You know, I don't think Sirianni's calling the plays. Sure, he's got his finger in what they're calling as far as the game plan during the week and all of that. But bottom line is, I think he needs to get involved more. I do. You know, it's, again, this is Brian Johnson. He's never called plays in the NFL, and this is not disrespect to him. And he's primarily got a college background, you know. And I don't think, you know, he's learned on the fly, too. He is. Let alone the plays are too basic to the point of the route tree is horrible and the lack of motion. Yeah, the plays are too basic. Almost like their defense, it's too reliant on the Jimmys and the Joes, and the X's and the O's need to be picked up. Their run game, I mean, it's elementary. Again, they are the best offensive line in football. It's not close, but I don't care. If you only have two running plays, you're not going to be the best running team in football. They have like two running plays, and I'm not joking. Like, it is a very limited Rolodex of plays they go to the run game. It's not going to get it done against the good defenses in football. Last year, you know, with Shane Steichen as OC, they had so many different runs and wrinkles off the run that...
Look at the Colts right now.
Exactly. I mean, with not even nearly the same personnel.
No, they've been missing Jonathan Taylor most of the year.
There was points of the year, and this is where my thought came out, and I'll get to it in a second. And like, I was like, you can't stop this offense. Like, last year, I was literally like, there's nothing, you can't stop them. You're going to have to gamble and do some crazy shit. That's where I got into, you know, Steve Spagnuolo and going with the Dolphins, the Eagles last year. I just went, you got to take chances and go, like, you're going to laugh to yourself and go, I can't believe I'm calling this defense right now. But there's no way you could stop all of the stuff they do. That is not the case this year. It's simple. Pass game, run game. And then I think when you add that into the players are pressing, Jalen Hurts isn't playing his best, A.J. Brown, you know, fumble, Devontae Smith fumble. They're trying to make plays with their pure ability. It's leading to, you know, less than performances right now by the Philadelphia Eagles.
I think another issue too, Chris, is how predictable they've become by their personnel in the backfield.
Sure.
When Swift is out there, he's either running the ball or he's a non-factor.
Right.
They don't get him involved in the pass game anymore.
Right.
And when Gainwell's out there, he's the guy that gets the touches.
Yes.
There's no balance of, well, this guy can run and be involved in the pass game. So it goes back to your point about the predictability of the run game play calls.
Very much. Very much so. You know, I know they're still one of the top offenses in football, and they should be.
Well, look at the talent.
I know, but they should be more dominant.
Right.
To, you know, I mean, again, we've broken it down many times. It's the best O-line in football, right? I mean, the 49ers couldn't get within 10 feet of Jalen Hurts. And they just need to help these guys out a little bit and give them some advantage. It's the best duo receiver in football. If it's not the best, it's top two or three. The tight end's damn good. The running backs are pretty damn good. I mean, we know the quarterback, right? There's no excuse for them to be struggling the way they are on the offensive side of the ball. To be, you know, top 10 is good, but it's not good for the Eagles. It should be top 5 for sure. And the defense should be top 10 at the very worst, and it's 22nd. And that's, like, inexcusable for the talent they have on that side of the ball.
Between the pylons had a Falcons question. I know Chris doesn't care about stats, but I would love to hear his thoughts on Arthur Smith's offense and his refusal to feature star players. 3 years of top 10 picks on elite offensive weapons that are underutilized.
Well, yes.
And they finally had a good week, by the way, all three of them.
Yeah, right, right. No, I mean, listen, I understand that. I think there's some things that play into that, right? one, the quarterback, you know, trustworthiness, right? I don't think that's been there to where they can just open up the offense. And again, he's growing in some areas. Like, and again, last week there was a lot of good throws and things he did that were wow. But he had those two or three plays where you were like, what the fuck are you doing? Right? And those two or three plays lost them the game.
Yeah.
Throw an interception on a screen pass, hold the ball too long in the end zone, get strip sack, safety. You know, that was the game. So, you know, I think there's that aspect. I think the other aspect is we've talked about this with Drake London when he came out. He's not a separation guy, right? He's a really good receiver. I don't think he's your bona fide just number one superstar. He can be a number one, but then across from him, you need a really good two who can fly. That's what I would say, okay. Right? The guy that can take a top off, open the field up, and now he can run routes and use his body and work. When he's the main go-to guy, and offenses know that, and I mean defenses know that and all that, yeah, he's not going to separate and burn people and do all that. And I think, you know, a little bit of that with Pitts as well, all right? It's just that he's a tight end. And they have a quarterback who's not going to slam it in there to tight windows all the time. They need some other things to take pressure off of those two guys to get them open would be my assessment.
What you're talking about with Drake London kind of reminds me of when you look at the Chargers. Mike Williams is great.
Yeah.
He's obviously out for the year. But
yeah.
Having Keenan Allen out there, who's different, not saying they have that burner,
yeah.
But they're both so good that they benefit from one another. And Drake London doesn't have that other guy.
No. And like to your point, like, He's almost like a blend of the two guys you just mentioned.
Yeah.
He's got the Mike Williams size, but he's actually a great route runner like Keenan
sure.
Allen and does all that. I don't think he's quite as fast as Mike Williams going down the field, right? But
he's a contested catch
but
guy.
But
the
route
the
running's better
yeah.
than Mike Williams.
Yeah.
And on there on a Keenan Allen type of thing to where, yeah, I kind of look at Drake London and go, he's not the guy I would always want outside and go, oh, it's man-to-man, we're going to him. I go, I'd like to have him in the slot and him run routes and use his body and shield people off and catch the ball over the middle and take a shot and break a tackle. I almost look at him like that kind of guy, like a Michael Thomas-ish in his prime more than the burner on the outside.
Our last question in the run the damn ball tier from Ted J. Rowland. Which offensive scheme is most improved midseason? Would it be a team like the Browns finding their groove with a strong offensive line, a selection of talented backs and receivers?
Well, they're doing a great job of managing the offense without a superstar quarterback. They still got to run the damn ball because I don't think they can realistically be what they want to be if they're going to be asking Joe Flacco to throw the ball 45-plus times, right?
Yeah, is this an anomaly? Like, this
right?
is just crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
And I would say, even like watching the Jaguars film, and I wrote a few notes on that too, the Jaguars like went overboard on run defense, where you were just like, listen, this isn't like a rookie quarterback who can't throw. I mean, you can't be that aggressive to stop the run and think Joe's not going to hit a wide-open 12-yard curl route. I mean, it's not that, like, what are we doing there? So they overplayed it a little bit, but you know, the fact that they can rely on the drop back pass game with a guy like Flacco is important, you know, and then their screen game is improved and their play action pass is improved. Right? Early in the game last week, and I said this on Sunday night and it confirmed it when I went back and watched it. I mean, early in the game they just killed the Jags with play action passes. And people were wide open and they've done a really good job that way. But I put them in that pound the rock, run the damn ball category because that's what they are best at. I know they got some O-line injuries and that stinks and that hurts them there, but I don't think it's realistic to think Flacco, mid-40s passing the ball is going to be a recipe for success consistently.
And we have some screenshots of that touchdown to David Bell on 4th-and-3
right?
as well.
Right.
So,
I mean, play of the game, really, yeah. It kind of felt like it was 21-14, and you kind of feel like, man, if the Jags stop them here, they kind of had the momentum. It's an all-out blitz, 4th-and-3. Now, you see the three DBs.
Ooh.
Yeah, right? You see the three DBs at top, right? So what they're doing here, Connor, is I forget who the point guy is. But the point guy is going to take the point guy of the bunch receivers on the top right, right? And then they're trying to play with Darius Williams and Rayshon Jenkins. They're trying to play in and out.
Right.
I got the first guy in. You got the first guy out. The problem is, all right, the point guy gets out of the way, and both guys go in. So now there's a mix-up of, wait, who do I got? And go ahead into the next screenshot, right? And this is how you beat the in-and-out coverage. If you send two guys outside or two guys inside, it makes it hard on them. So here they are going in, right? And Darius Williams takes the guy that keeps going in instead of just waiting for the guy, which is Bell, as you see him there. He is out outside of the short crosser, and he should take him. But he took the cheese of the outside guy going underneath, and he realizes it as the ball is being thrown. He stops, puts the brakes on, he slips and falls. Now David Bell's totally wide open. Touchdown Browns, biggest play of the game. But, yeah, good job. Good game plan designing there. They obviously knew that that's what they do. The little in and out, you know, with the point man-to-man like that, and found a good way to schematically screw them over there.
And Njoku had a touchdown on a bust as well.
Exactly
so
right.
So they came into this game and knew exactly how to confuse the back end of Jacksonville's defense.
Definitely. Jacksonville's D's reeling right now. And, yeah, I mean, Njoku, it's a third and one play action and goes uncovered. I mean, uncovered. Right? He had both touchdowns were play action. Rayshon Jenkins, I believe, was responsible. The first one. The second one was Aluakon, I believe.
Yeah.
And they ended up easy touchdowns for David Njoku.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
We hit on the Eagles, Cowboys, and 49ers. How about the DraftKings odds for the NFC number one seed right now? No surprise here, Chris. The 49ers are the runaway favorite at minus 175. They have Arizona, Baltimore, Washington, and then the Rams. As the Cowboys are plus 800, they got Buffalo, Miami, Detroit, Washington a little tougher. The Eagles,
that schedule is really what kills
and
them.
Buffalo's
here.
A little hot right now and desperate,
right.
So that always
scares
you at Buffalo.
Yep.
With the Eagles, they have the Seahawks, Giants, Arizona, and Giants. So the Eagles are only plus 170 because, quite simply, Chris, they have a pretty friendly schedule there as well. Although the Giants aren't a gimme anymore.
Well, they're scrappers.
They are scrappy.
They are. And
they
that
are
defense
scrappy.
And what they do, I mean, nothing's a given. And then we know, hey, the Eagles, you know, they've been one of those teams for whatever reason that have played down to their competition a little bit.
The Washington game,
right?
Early in the year.
I mean, they lost to your Jets.
Yeah. People forget that.
No, they definitely have had some games like that where you just go, damn, they're better than them, and they're letting them hang around. They're going to get a last-ditch effort from the Seattle Seahawks this week too, right? I mean, Seattle, it's like, oh, shit, if we don't win tonight.
We're in trouble. Yeah.
Right. But, that Cowboys schedule, that's why they're at plus 800. That's real right there. Their next three games are as tough as anybody in football. My money would be on the 49ers, even though that Baltimore game on Christmas night is going to be a lot of fun, and that certainly will be a coin flip type of football game.
Maybe a Super Bowl preview.
Could
be.
We'll
see.
I know.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly.
Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day.
Download the app and use the promo code UNBUTTONED when you sign up.
DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours.
It's nice that you do the read with the
other
host.
Yeah, we do it together.
That's really nice. Yeah, on Happy Hour, I'm just lone wolf. They just throw me to the side and just, yeah, you got it.
Damn, that's messed up.
Yeah, five days a week.
Does Barry throw you a little of that DraftKings coin he's making?
No, the crown is absolutely not mine.
What an asshole Barry is. a jerk.
Yeah, Pete's got my back.
I mean, DraftKings is probably paying Barry $1 million and he's making you do the read. That's not right. How dare he?
We'll continue with the offensive scheme tiers here. How about play action wizards? The Lions, Ben Johnson getting a lot of hype. hype, obviously. He will be back in the head coaching cycle if he chooses to be. It's been a really nice debut year for Bobby Slowick and the Texans.
Definitely.
And then the Vikings on this list as well with what O'Connell's been able to do. So, Chris, let's start with the Lions here. This one from CJ Easterday. Where does Ben Johnson's scheme rank for you based on what you see on the tape? Which is more impressive to you, his pass game or run game concepts?
He's really good at both. He really is. He's, you know, first off, where would he rank? He's, to me, it's you know, when you talk about best offensive minds in the game, we've already hit on a few. McDaniel, Shanahan, right?
McVay still got it.
McVay does. Yeah. It's through a little bit of a different premise. You know, it's not as overly creative and wowing, but it's a formula that's tried and true, and he calls the right plays and knows how to package them all together. So you're exactly right about that. Shane Steichen, that was why I was blanking out. Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota. And Ben Johnson. That would be kind of my top-tier offensive play callers in football right now. So that's where he ranks. You know, I guess I would go probably his pass game is a little more creative than his run game. Run game creative, they do a lot of different things. It's really good. Pass game, you know, they always have a few plays where I just go, whoa, that was cool, or wow, that was, you know, aggressive, or wow, that totally screwed the defense over. They're not afraid to run some trick plays and do stuff like that. So I think I'm probably more impressed with that. But, yeah, their play-action pass game is the key to their success. One, I mean, yeah, they need to run the ball. We know that, right? But they don't have necessarily – you know, big-time explosive receivers down the field. They don't have a quarterback who has, like, a huge rocket arm, and he's not going to make plays off schedule. So play action's the way to work for him and them to get explosive plays. And, of course, he's not very good with people around him or having to move on the run either. And play action, slows the pass rush down a lot of the times and allows him to step in to the ball and have a clean pocket around him that is, you know, preferable for a guy like Jared Goff. So you're a big fan of the Lions football team, and yeah, their play action pass is up there with anybody in the game.
And I think his ability to adapt, you know, big time draft picks, Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam LaPorta, into the offense right away. We don't see that with rookie tight ends.
No,
very
and
often.
If they can just get Jameson Williams going, that's here on a consistent one. Basis, because I mean, you can see he's got speed and explosive ability. It just got to be a little more consistent in getting the ball. I mean, damn, they'll be scary fast and dangerous on that side of the ball with some of those guys you mentioned already.
So this one on the Texans as we stay in play action Wizards from Tomas Pena. Despite the struggles against Saleh's Jets, Bobby Slowick has been thriving in his first year as a play caller. What similarities and differences do you see between his scheme and Shanahan's?
I don't think there's a lot of, you know, differences. I think it's basic Shanahan is what I would call it. It's not quite as creative, and the motions and the, you know, Shanahan's such a master of, like, you always hear me say, like, oh, it's cool run to the left of McCaffrey, cool run to the left of McCaffrey, cool run to the left of McCaffrey. Oh, fake the run to McCaffrey, Debo went around the other edge. Oh, we faked it to McCaffrey, we faked it to Debo. Oh, we threw
There's
it
Ayuk.
To Kittle down the middle,
yeah.
Or Ayuk, right? That's where he's amazing. You know, and I think those things can come from Bobby Slowick. He's got a rookie quarterback. It's his first year, you know, and he's got some young weapons too. So he probably doesn't want to throw too much on their plate. But it's still what they do is their run game hasn't killed it. But you have to respect it because it is well thought out and well coached and pretty creative. And because of that, and the fact that they've stayed pretty patient with it in a lot of the games, that's what's helped C.J. Stroud. That's about as far as the managing of C.J. Stroud went. It's just like, hey, let's keep them thinking we're going to run, because if he runs play action, he's going to strike and hit big passes down the football field. I haven't watched that film yet, the Texas Jets game. I'm hoping I'll get to that either tomorrow or Friday a little, because I do want to check it out and just see what the Jets did to that Texans offense a little bit. And, hey, the injuries, Nico getting hurt, Tank Dell not being in there, Dalton Schultz being
difference.
Banged up.
Yeah.
There's a huge problem for the Texans here, but I love the offense and the trajectory it's going. I've heard Bobby Slowick a little in head coaching conversations, and I want to go, that's awesome, but don't do it, Bobby. It's your first year as a play caller. Let's get another year or two under our belt here, you know, and really show what you can do. Maybe get another, you know, free agent receiver to go with C.J. Stroud this offseason, and all of a sudden next year you might have a top, you know, offense in football, and, you know, it could be even a better job that presents itself. So that's what I would say there. But, yeah, I like what they're doing.
Right. Outside of Tank Dell, all the skill player personnel, they inherited.
Yeah, exactly
so,
right.
This offseason, go get one more of your guys.
Exactly.
Because the Tank Dell pick, I know he got hurt. But
he killed it.
Tremendous.
Killed it.
Look, I mean, that offense without him against the Jets, nobody could run away from the Jets' corners.
Anybody. Nobody.
No,
I know.
Nobody at all.
Right.
Our last team, the Vikings here, you talked about O'Connell being highly regarded. It's been a season of really triumph for the Vikings. Just no Justin Jefferson for a large part of it. You lose Kirk Cousins. How does this offense find a way to stay competitive?
I know. It's hopefully where Nick Mullins will come in.
Yeah.
Right? He's a better passer than Josh Jobs. He knows the offense better, too. That's kind of why I thought he would start last week.
He's a play-action quarterback
from Shanahan
was with him.
Exactly
yeah.
right. So there's going to be a lot of things there. O'Connell, a little bit like McVay, in that you don't, when you watch it pre-snap and all that, you don't go, oh, wow, this is amazing. But it's the right plays against the right coverages, and then it's the nuance in how he teaches the routes versus certain coverages that expose the defense. And that's where he's really good. And, play-action wizards for a team that they don't even run the ball that well, but they still run play-action off the wazoo. Because of, I think, the things we talked about. It helps protection. It opens up the field. It makes it easy for the quarterback to see down the field. Gives the receivers a little time to work downfield. And they got those type of guys. And they're almost like the opposite. They do play action pass to help out the run game a little bit. Hey, play action, play action, play action. We've hit you with Justin Jefferson and everybody 10 times now. Now you're so worried about
ready
that.
To bite
now
it
run up the middle for 7 yards is very effective. So that's where they're really good. And I would expect to see a better Vikings offense this week under Nick Mullins.
So our next one, managed to maximize. Bengals, Colts, Broncos, Rams. Is this basically just doing the most with what they have?
I think so. That's basically what I'm saying. It's head coaches who were coaching their asses off, play callers, right? And have found a formula in which, hey, it helps us win games. We're not going to be the top offense in football or anything like that. But, take the Broncos, for instance. I mean, every week is basically like right now we're going, hey, Russell's great. Russell's great. It's like 180 yards and 2 touchdowns and no interceptions,
yeah.
right?
35, 40
right.
rushing yards.
Don't do anything crazy yeah. early on and then, hey, we'd like you to make a play or two at the end of the game to pull us through, right? That's basically what it is. So, yeah, to me it's like unbelievable coaching, maximizing the offense, and finding new ways and tinkering to make it as best it could possibly be.
We had a question on those Broncos from Joshua yeah. Nichter. Does Sean Payton have the Broncos poised for a playoff run? Run first offense plus play action plus Russ and Sutton playing yard ball.
Exactly right. That's what I'm talking about. It's run. It's conservative. It's a little boring at times. Their defense is playing awesome. I mean, awesome.
They came to life.
Right?
After a
nobody can do
start.
Shit against them
right.
now.
I know.
So, that allows Sean to even sell that to Russell even more. It's a little bit like their Seattle Seahawks days. Hey, we're going to play D. We're going to run the ball. You just take care of the ball. And then we need you to make like 4 or 5 plays a game. Just where it's like, hey, Russell, what a great throw or great job getting out of the pocket, backyard ball. And if you could do that, we can win the football game. And we've seen that more weeks than not, other than 2 weeks ago when he threw the 3 fourth-quarter interceptions against the Houston Texans, and he was on his way kind of doing the same thing that day, second-half magical plays. They've stuck to the script, and they've become a real pain in the ass.
We talked earlier about how backup quarterbacks needing to play and how that can impact your scheme. This one from Cincy John at 1958. How did Zach Taylor change the scheme for Jake Browning, starting with getting the run game going?
Yeah.
I saw Chase Brown, by
yes.
the way, which I know you loved him pre-draft. Did they forget they had him?
He was banged up, and I guess they, rookie.
Right,
They didn't know if they could trust him or whatever else, but they need him, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's one of those guys, again, that you just go, he can do a lot of something with a little something, right?
It looks different
it
than when Joe Mixon gets the
he's
ball.
He's got a little more explosion
yeah.
and just acceleration and top-end speed. Joe Mixon's still a good player, but, yeah, I don't think he's capable of going 65 yards up the sideline like Brown did. Now, he's got a little more maybe of a physical element and can run some people over. But I think the thing that I – watching back that game, watching the Monday night game against the Jaguars, okay, one, hey, run game, toughness, certainly. And that seems to be a Cincinnati thing at the end of the year every year where it's like the last six or seven games, all of a sudden they start to figure out how to run the ball and become tough there. But the play, the movement of the motions has definitely gone up. And then way more play action, you know, especially this last week. I mean, the play action, I promise you, in almost every significant completion in the football game that Jake Browning threw was a play action pass. Every one, including the 126 yards in screen passes that he threw. He threw 126 yards of screen passes to Brown and Mixon, and they were both off of play-action fakes, where then he looked down the field and then comes back to them and hits them there. So that, to me, was the biggest thing there. I looked at – when I turned on the film this week, I literally went, man, this almost has more of a 49ers – Dolphins feel to their attack than it did the Bengals that I'm used to with Joe Burrow and all of that. You know, he's a good thrower. He certainly is like Joe Burrow light, and he understands the offense and all that. He still misses a few throws, and this is why he's a backup quarterback, everybody. Before we go to Josh Dobbs land here and want to give him $100 million guaranteed, right? There's still a few plays here every game that you go, he should have hit that. Now, they've gotten away with that, and that's good. But, you know, they're doing a really good job. Zach Taylor, Callahan, the offensive coordinator of – refinding a way to make this offense work and make the quarterback feel comfortable.
42.3% of Jake Browning's dropbacks were with play action that led all NFL starters last week. 17.4 yards
per attempt. Gosh, it felt like more than that. I would have thought it was even higher.
Because all their effective plays were off.
I guess that's what it was. I guess you're right.
Our other two teams in here, Chris, in Manage to Maximize, Colts and Rams. You've talked about both of them a little bit, but McVay and Steichen having really good years.
Like, incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible. Both of them have way exceeded expectations. You know, I mean, one, to hit on McVay real quick, you know, everybody, oh, yeah, he's offensive genius. But just like Shanahan, he's going to stay with the run. He wants to run the ball. He wants play action, too. But where he's amazing and where he just tortures people is he finds all these ways to go, oh, here's Puka for six, here's Cooper for seven, here's Puka for six, and everybody goes, fucking A, I'm so sick of these fucking two running these little option routes and we can't cover them. Oh, boom, down the field for Atwell for 50. Oh, gosh, damn it, we bracketed Cooper on the underneath option route, and now Puka's running down the field for a 45-yard gain. That's kind of how he does it, right? So it's not as sexy as some of the other guys, but he's a master play caller, game plan designer, and how he ties plays together, right? He's got checks and balances is what I always call it. You overplay this too much, he's got something to check your ass and balance out your fucking defense, right? And that's where he's very good in that department. Shane Steichen's got it all. He's got it all.
Yeah.
Run game is really creative.
He's for real.
He really is. And the RPOs, the read option RPOs where they do double, right? All of that is top notch. And, you know, they're the only thing I say to them is just keep throwing the ball down the field a little bit so they can keep everything else open. Gardner Minshew, I think people know he doesn't have a big arm, and they play for the intermediate, stop the run a little bit. If they throw the ball like they did a little like 2 weeks ago against the Titans where they took some shots, it just opens things up. But, man, phenomenal job by all these coaches right here.
So the blueprint you've seen Steichen lay out this year gives you a lot of hope for Anthony Richardson next year.
I think it's just handmade for Richardson. He makes it easy for the quarterback. He plays through the run. He makes you defend that, right? And he has, you know, again, like all good play callers, when you start to overplay that or one aspect of his offense, like we were talking about with the Eagles last year, I used to go, in games and go, oh, if this team stops this, they're going to stop the Eagles. And then he'd come out with a play, and I go, oh, shit, he's got that off of that this week? Oh, fuck, well, no, they can't do that to stop that because that's going to be open all game. He's always got something like that. They're another team, a little more talent there. You know, maybe another receiver in the offseason. You know, the quarterback back healthy and all that. Like, yeah, going to be dangerous.
Our next and our second to last tier, basic with playmakers, the Seahawks and the Bucks here, Chris. We had a question from Mr. Scott Briggs. With existing weapons a quarterback in Seattle will inherit next year, what scheme and what type of quarterback would maximize this talent?
Yeah. The scheme, to me, is the biggest issue. It really is. The offensive line plays into that. And that's where, you know, I do want to give an excuse for Shane Waldron and that their offensive line stinks. It's not very good.
And they've dealt with a lot of injury early in the
year.
That's
what I mean. They don't run the ball well. They don't protect all that well. So it's hard to be, you know, real effective. To me, the biggest thing is, they just got to be better up front. But, they have the type of – they could go a lot of different ways with the group they got there. I mean, Fant, those three receivers, Kenneth Walker and Charbonnet. I mean, that to me is what's exciting about the Seahawks in their future. Yeah, maybe Geno's not back. They get another quarterback to the question here. I understand that, and maybe that will because he certainly hasn't played his best. I know that. He's definitely missed throws this year that he did not miss last year. But, I mean, they're a team I look at and go, they could, like, play spread and kind of spread you out and fire it around the football field and be space and then go, here's Kenneth Walker. Now you got to stop this run game. Or do they get back to, we're going to smash mouth, do that, run the football, play through the defense a little bit,
and then take deep shots down football.
Right, which is what I would expect to see Pete Carroll do. That was my point, and thank you for buttoning up my thought for me.
That's why I'm here. Yep. The last one here in this tier, the Bucs. It's been a tough year for Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
Mike Evans is Mr. 1,000 Yards, although he had a tough week. What have you seen from Baker and what this offense is trying to do?
I think we can almost a little bit like the same thing talk about the offensive line a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
There's an issue there. So they don't have like a run game that they can regularly like rely on, right? You know, the pass game, it's solid, but I don't look at it as going, this is reinventing the wheel. This is amazing. Well, I will say where it gives them a fighting chance is that they are aggressive and they can make some plays that way, right? I don't ever look at it sometimes and go, that was well thought or that's cool. They're packaging that together. But between Baker's big right arm and him his aggressive mindset, and like you said, Evans there, you know, they can be three and out. 2-play 70-yard touchdown,
right.
three and out, 4-play 80-yard touchdown, right? They can do that. That's kind of what's a little frustrating with them in general. They ran the ball a little bit better with White last week. Maybe if they can get White involved in the pass game a little bit, the screen game, do all that, that can be another avenue to open up some of their stuff. We'll see where it goes. But, a little underwhelming with the firepower they have.
It's consistent that Todd Bowles, Pete Carroll, two coaches that want to be able to run the ball and play defense, and they fall into the basic but has playmakers.
Well, and scheme. Then you go like what I think is crazy. Yeah, and Dave Canales too, Pete says, right? I mean, he was in Seattle, right? So, what's crazy to me is like head coaches like that, and I want to be like, Pete, you went to two Super Bowls. Your offensive line was phenomenal.
Right.
Like, why are we not investing in that a little bit more in Seattle over the last few years? And Tampa, kind of the same way. I want to go, you went to the Super Bowl and then lost a divisional playoff game and nobody could get within 10 feet of your fucking quarterback, right? Like, you know, why didn't we go that route a little bit more? I think that's surprised me with those two head coaches.
It fell off abruptly, especially in Tampa. Okay, so I lied. This is our second to last tier because we have a bonus tier.
We have a last tier.
We have a last tier that's really a joke. It's funny. But this is the best name.
This is also funny.
I don't know what the fuck we are, but our quarterbacks are awesome. The Bills and the Chiefs.
That's right. I mean, I don't know.
What more needs to be said?
The Chiefs, I mean, they're still trying to figure out kind of what their identity is. They are run more, but they're still not a great running team. They got some screens and stuff that I like in their passing game that they've made a little bit of a staple there. But I don't know. The game plan goes a little bit like week to week, wherever it goes. I don't know. You know, last week, again, they're a running team, but they didn't run it that much. They went back to let's throw the ball most of the time with Mahomes. So, and, you know, even in the games they do run the ball really well, I go, damn, they can't run the ball in the end zone and win the games that way. Eagles, Green Bay, whatever. Like, great stats, but you didn't fucking win the game through the run game. So that's what I worry about. You know, so that. And then the same thing with, the Bills. I mean, what are the Bills other than Josh Allen running around with his fucking hair on fire making plays? Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit of both. And, you know, I think both of them, Mahomes and Allen, have not played to their total capabilities because they're forcing things. They're feeling like they got to carry the squad. Mahomes is definitely getting a little into the, you know, trying to look for big plays and just go, hey, there's a six-yard completion here. Don't go crazy looking for the big plays like we did a few years ago and got caught up in that mix, right? That mess. And then I think Allen, the same thing. You know, it's they've had moments of struggle, so he tries to force it to happen. I think that's the big thing is, like, when people ask me, what are the identity of the Bills? I go, it's Josh Allen. And what are the identity of the Mahomes? I go, Patrick Mahomes? I mean, I don't know exactly what you want to call the offense identity right now as a whole.
Let's look how Allen made it work against Kansas City. I think the story was, Chris, he was able to beat the blitz. I mean, when they blitzed Josh Allen, which was on about 36.7% of his dropbacks, completion percentage almost at 65%, yards per attempt was up at 7. He throws the touchdown, no turnover. So we know what Allen can do when he's under pressure.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's like Mahomes. You're going to go, like, do we want to blitz him? Are we sure? Because you're really rolling the dice, right? I mean, he makes one guy miss in the backfield. Now he buys a little time. You're compromised downfield. You blitz a lot of the times. Yeah, there's less people in the secondary. There's one-on-one matchups to be had. Watch out, right? There's all of that. The other thing they did that I think was interesting in the football game is they threw the ball to James Cook, and a little bit because, hey, the Chiefs play man-to-man, so I think they looked at it and said, wait, he can beat linebackers. The other thing they did is the Chiefs usually with their blitz, right, force the running back to stay in. There was a number of plays in this game where Allen and the offensive line figured out how to pick up the blitz and still get the back out. And that screwed over the Chiefs, right, to where they were like, wait, he was supposed to stay in and block. Who the fuck's covering him now? He's running up the left sideline for a big gain. Right, and that's where they burned the Chiefs' defense a few times in the football game. But yeah, it was a fun game to watch. They were controlling the football game early on, and man, 14-0, moving the ball, throws the ball across his body like he does. 27 Connor made a great play. I mean, he was way on the backside of the field, but hustled over just to get in the passing lane, and all of a sudden he must have been like, oh my gosh, he's about to throw to the guy here that I'm trying to run down, makes the interception, and that made the game very interesting from that point on.
Big win from Allen, but there was one play that you saw on film, Chris, that he missed to Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis wasn't a factor at all in this one, but a wide open in the fourth quarter with 2:23.
2:23, right? And they're trying to run the fake wide receiver screen, right? And then send the guys upfield. So right. He's going to pump the ball into the flat. He's going to pump it to Diggs, who's at the inside of the three receivers here. He's like, hey, it's a bubble screen. Go, hey, it's Diggs. You want to cover him? And Allen looked to Dalton Kincaid, the outside guy. Instead of, you're supposed to read this play inside out. This is blitz by the Chiefs. He's got exactly what he wants. And, yeah, misses an opportunity here for a touchdown, easy touchdown, that would have made life very hard in the Chiefs at the end and put them up by a touchdown. Instead, it becomes a gamble. And this is what we've seen from the Bills a little bit this year, and some of the losses is not that it's bad, but maybe not taking advantage of everything they had there. You know, whether it's Allen and the all-out blitz against the Eagles and he throws it one way and Gabe Davis goes the other way, right? Well, here's the payback from Allen making the mistake on Gabe Davis. He misses them in a chance where they could have gone up 7. But for the most part, to what you said earlier, when the Chiefs played coverages like this, blitzed, whatever, it was advantage Bills. It was. And that even goes for the Cook touchdown when he ran down the seam early on in the football game. That was a blitz zone that screwed them all up. Bills did a few things in the game that, with as complicated as the Chiefs are on the defensive side of the ball and all the things they do, it definitely confused them and they weren't quite sure how to defend it. But all in all, that's still a really good Chiefs defense.
On the Chiefs side of things, from Luke Buck 18, what has changed in Kansas City now that Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator rather than Bieniemy? The pass catchers are largely the same, but the drop off seems huge.
Yeah, they're relatively the same. You know, your second best threat is still a rookie receiver. I don't think you can forget, and I said this a little on Sunday, like Juju Smith-Schuster for their football team last year and Mecole Hardman were veteran guys who had been there, right? And they did make a difference. Juju Smith-Schuster, everybody's got to remember, he did catch for 900-something yards receiving last year. It's not sexy, but he knew how to work he was almost like a de facto tight end. You know, slot, big tight end, could kind of work there, the ins and outs, the ace, the 10-yard completions, do all of that. Veteran type of player, so can handle a lot of offense. Same for Mecole Hardman, right? So those are two elements that I look at that, yeah, they don't have them. They've had to rely on younger guys this year. Valdez-Scantling is not a guy you want to make your consistent go-to guy all the time. Sky Moore is really just a slot receiver, so that hurts them a little bit. And then I think you add on that they lost Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy was a fucking good coach.
Yeah.
I mean, their offense was more creative and had more answers last year under Bieniemy. That would be the big thing. And I think the other thing, too, is, and I've heard this from people in Kansas City, Bieniemy was the enforcer, and that's missed there, too. Right? He was the guy that kept everybody in check. No excuses. Fuck you. Let's go out here. Keep your cool. We got to go out here and win the game right here. Whatever. I don't think they have that there either. So I think when you take all of that into account, that's kind of the issues the Chiefs have this year.
You brought up Juju. He caught 47 first downs for them last year.
There.
This year, Kelsey has 48, but that's a given. The next guy, Rashee Rice with 32.
Yeah. See, that's a
they're
lot.
They're missing that chains mover.
Right. It doesn't need to be 80 yards in a – but, all the first downs Juju gave him. That's exactly the way to say it. You know, all the first downs or all the eight-yard catches he had on first down to make it second and two, and now we can run it or throw it deep or throw some crazy gadget play at you. They're missing that aspect of the offense for sure.
Our last one here, it technically is a tier. Stinks and not changing the Steelers, Chris, and just the Steelers. Dr. Stanley Goodspeed asked, why is the Steelers' offensive scheme the worst?
It is the worst. And again, these were all teams that are playoff, right? Playoff conversation teams. We, you know, I think we all know that the Carolina and New England could probably be, you know, in the stinks and not changing category, but we're not worried about that. It's just that I don't really know what the Steelers' offense is trying to accomplish more times than not. You know, talk about identity, right? You know, I don't know what it is. I don't ever see tying of plays together. I don't ever see, ooh, they're doing this to set up this later on in the football game. The pass concepts couldn't be more fucking basic and bland. The run game ain't that all that creative either. The O-line is solid. I think it's going in the right direction, but not so great that it can just road grade you and dominate that way, right? Quarterback play ain't that great either. Yeah. Listen, you know, all the things that I worried about with Kenny Pickett coming out in that draft, or this is what you're starting to hear out of Pittsburgh and their fan base a little bit. He doesn't do anything special, right? You know, he's not a high-level thrower of the football. You know, and I think, gosh, what was that? Thursday night, right? Kirk Herbstreit, Al Michaels, they were letting you know, like, yeah, they got a decision to make on Kenny Pickett. They're not just pulling that out of their ass and saying that on Thursday night.
They talked to people.
They talked to people in Pittsburgh. They were like, yeah, we're a little underwhelmed with this play. We're not sure if he's the quarterback of the future or not, right? That was the weird thing about that draft class. I love Corral's talent, but I knew it was raw. I love Nolik's talent, but it was really fucking raw.
Yeah.
I liked Kenny Pickett's quarterback play, but I didn't like his talent, right? So that was a weird one, and we'll see where it goes as far as the quarterback of the Steelers.
And he was the only first-round guy.
I know.
No second-round guy.
Right.
So
right.
When it comes down to it, it's, you know, that class is going kind of how people would thought, unfortunately.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's
no
unfortunate.
Doubt.
All right, this is a pop culture quiz from Pete. Pete Ooh. Needs to know this. The question was from Dr. Stanley Goodspeed. Pete asked, what epic movie is Dr. Stanley Goodspeed the hero of? I looked it up. I haven't seen it. Gosh. But I know the answer. I have not seen it. No. It's from the 60s. Oh, it's...
It's from the... Pete's saying the 90s.
Oh, no, you're right. 96. 96. That's
96,
my bad. 96.
And it's a is it a Disney movie?
No. No. Action movie, thriller.
Hold on. Dr. Stanley...
You've probably seen this.
Gosh. I feel like I know this, and it's an action theory. Is a big star in it?
Yes, the cast is pretty serious.
Is it Last Action Hero? I don't even know. What is it?
The Rock. The Rock with Sean Connery and Ed Harris.
Damn. Yes, I would not have pulled that out, but that was a good movie. No, I've seen it. It's good. It is a good movie.
I mean, to be fair,
he was born in the
90s. 4 or 5. I don't think I'd be allowed to watch The Rock when I was 4. Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, yeah. Pete.
We're old, Pete. These guys are just being born with the things we think are classics. So we'll get him on it. He'll get there.
I do my homework when I come on this show.
You do.
I always do.
You do. So, you always do your homework. You don't need to watch movies.
Watched Half-Baked this summer.
Hey, look at you. Yeah, that's my guy
there. It was phenomenal.
Right. So. At least you watch movies. My regular host, you know, he has a swearing problem and he doesn't watch movies. Nothing.
What does he do to decompress?
We would all like to know what he
That's
does.
That's scary.
I don't know.
I think he just works.
Know. I mean, he does work a lot. But damn, he's either driving his wife crazy or doing something crazy we don't know about in his free time, right? So
yeah, we each got our own things.
I know, right?
Oh, I love
One day
it.
We'll figure it out. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the pod. Did it a little different way today, but I actually liked it. It was fun doing this little offensive breakdown and putting them in tears. Connor, you the man as always.
Dude, thank you.
Appreciate you driving the ship.
Oh, anytime.
Always
love,
love your insight and love when you host. You the man. Everybody, you know where to find us. Hit me up on social media. Tomorrow, I got the Picks Pod with Florio, PFTPM, Chris Sims Unbuttoned collaboration. That'll be dropping somewhere late morning, early afternoon. All be good out there. Enjoy Thursday Night Football. Have a good weekend. Peace out. Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.